Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 18 years from tonight, Grant Gill will become a comedy legend when he totally kills it at his improv class's graduation performance. Knees will be slapped. Hilarity will ensue. That's why he's already keeping himself in shape and razor sharp today with wellness tips and tools from AARP to help make sure his health lives as long as he does. Because the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/healthyliving.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jenny, and this is Hyphenated, a podcast about living in the hyphen. Today, we have a very special guest host who happens to be my good friend, Annie Segarra, also known as Annie Elaney, an American YouTuber, artist, and activist for LGBT and disability rights. Segarra, who is queer, Latinx, and disabled, advocates for accessibility, body positivity, and media representation of marginalized communities. I am so glad you're here, Annie.
Hi.
Welcome.
Oh my God. I'm so excited for what we're going to talk about today.
Oh, me too, because you and I often find ourselves venting about these things. And every time I see you posting on Instagram and just, you are a well of knowledge. And so I've learned so much from you, and me being a newly chronically ill individual have just learned a lot from you. And so I appreciate that. And I'm sure so many other people have also, because it's not talked about often. Also because it's not really seen in mainstream media.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. You and I were talking about it before. Something that I advocate a lot about, right, is being an ambulatory wheelchair user. So yes. For those who don't know me, don't know about like my condition, my disabilities, I have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a genetic connective tissue disorder. It affects a lot of my body, my joints, my skin, my blood vessels, and my internal organs. And where I lie on the spectrum of Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, I use a wheelchair for long distances, and I use a cane for shorter distances, and I'm sometimes able to walk like without any assistance at all, but it'll be for very, very short bursts of time. And this is something that a lot of people find confusing. So I had to create a whole campaign about it called Ambulatory Wheelchair Users Exist. Because so many people think that just because they see a wheelchair user stand up, that they're faking using a wheelchair. And circle back, right? We were talking about how, like, in novellas, that happens so much, that the villain is always a wheelchair user who eventually stands up from their wheelchair to some dramatic music.
Yeah.
And to reveal that they were faking all along. But we, like, never see any characters that are ambulatory wheelchair users that are not villains.
Novellas are so messed up. It's wild to me. You've experienced many a time where people look at you like you're a villain when they see you get up from your wheelchair. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So many different cases. I've always had some ability to walk a little bit. So I remember the first time I used my wheelchair to leave my house, somebody saw me get out of the driver's seat, go to the trunk and get my wheelchair out, sit down in it and go into the store. They like followed me into the store and they approached me to tell me, hey, you know, if you lost some weight, you probably wouldn't need to use that wheelchair.
Wow. Thanks for nothing.
It was horrible because, like,
an idiot.
At that point, like I said, that was my first time really leaving the house after I needed my wheelchair to leave it. And So my self-esteem wasn't too great. Like, this was an adjustment that I was going through. I could feel everybody's eyes on me every time I was in public, because everybody's eyes go to the wheelchair. They're like, whoa, a wheelchair out in the wild. Never seen that before. So I always God. Feel the people staring at me. Not so much, I think, recently, but sometimes I'll still catch it. Yeah, that was like one, I think, like, that was one of the more tame ones. I've had situations where...
That was tame? Okay.
Yeah. that was in relativity to, like, other situations. Fortunately for me, I call that tame because it's not as violent as has happened to other people. People have been left, like, horrible harassment notes on their car. People have gotten beat up. Because they walked away from a parking spot that was marked disabled parking spot, accessible parking spot. So that's the kind of anxiety I deal with, to be honest, with the amount of ignorance that there is about ambulatory wheelchair users, where I'm just kind of terrified, like, one day somebody's gonna, like, punch me in the face thinking that I am that novella villain because I'm able to get up from my wheelchair for a little bit. I've heard situations where, like, at the theme parks, especially, like, Disney World, where as an ambulatory wheelchair user, it's very accessible to me to, like, go around the park with my wheelchair and then get up out of my chair to transfer into a ride or something. One person did that. And then when she got back into her wheelchair, a kid, maybe, like, 8 years old, ran up to her and kicked her in the leg and then ran back to their dad. And the dad said, serves her right for faking a disability. Like, that's the kind of violence that, like, the ignorance
creates. My fucking God.
Mm-hmm.
Why the anger? It's like they're trying so hard to be allies. Like, what do they think they're doing?
I guess so.
What do they think they're accomplishing with this?
That's why I have, like, a slimmer of hope that, like, creating awareness campaigns can kind of, like, calm the violence down, because it's coming from a weird, super ally place. Like, I'm so angry that you take things away from disabled people. You know, like, it comes from a certain place that I'm like, I feel like your intentions are kind of good, but you're actually hurting disabled people by not doing all of the work, right? By not actually learning about diverse disabilities. Instead, you've allowed the little bit of representation that you've seen regarding disability, which is, like, disabled villains, a disabled villain trope, which is not, you know, exclusive to novellas. It's everywhere, right? You see Captain Hook, the governor from Walking Dead, eye patch. You see villains that are amputees or with facial differences / disfigurement with respect to how folks identify with that language. Like, there is usually some kind of visible disability that is correlated to a villain. I'm like, huh, that y'all trying to say something?
And that shit's getting mad old, and I'm tired of it. And I you know, I'm starting to see changes in media. It's a slowly but surely type of thing. You know, I wish it could go a little faster, but that's what's so important about having people in the writer's room and people in positions of power who come from diverse backgrounds.
And that kind of also brings up for me how disability is just so kind of segregated in the community, in, like, the community at large. I don't just mean, like, Latinx community. I mean, like, society in general, in the way that, like, you know, disabled students are separated from non-disabled students at school, and disabled living versus non-disabled living. I think about how, like, because of that segregation, that also invites the ignorance. And so then people don't even know how to be a good ally to disabled people when they want to be. They think something like harassing people who may, they don't know, may be faking a disability in public is the right way to go about it. That's what I mean. I think that people really need to explore like their relationships with disabled people. And I think that's hard. And I commend people who want to be allies. I think it's hard when there's so much separation and so little representation that they're like kind of just like running around with heads cut off. Like, we don't even know how to be helpful. And when we try to be helpful, we're being harmful. And to that I say, okay, so then listen to us. So
yeah.
How about like putting us in writers' rooms? How about supporting our projects? How about diversifying your social media feeds so that you actually have disabled creators as a part of your scrolling periods of your day so that you get to see us as human beings, you know?
Absolutely.
Hopefully that is the direction that we're moving.
That's what I tell people constantly. I'm like, here are a bunch of YouTubers and content creators that you can follow. Thank God for that, at least, right? Where, yeah, like mainstream media is failing us mm-hmm. when it comes to representation and getting authentic stories told from disabled folks. But there's kind of no excuse right now because of people like you who exist, who create content that is educational and informative.
Yeah.
And a big issue is when it comes to invisible illness, even on days where you are not using your cane or the wheelchair, right? Where they're like, oh, Annie's dancing. She must not be that disabled. You know what I mean? Like,
ooh.
Oh, Annie's going to VidCon or Annie's traveling. So I guess she's faking it.
Which speaks to like the ableism that we're all trying to exist in all the time and how like whether it's neurodivergence or invisible illness, right? Like a certain types of person experience is like being absolutely freaking traumatized by ableism and constantly trying to like, you know, make it look like we are not as disabled as we really are because of ableism, because we're scared of whether people might think we're unreliable when it comes to work, or we are lazy, or whatever other kind of negative view people have of people with disabilities. We're like, no, I'm fine. No. Like when your whole body is falling apart and you're like, it's okay. It's fine. I got this. You're putting all your energy into presenting yourself in a way that is palatable to people who may exhibit ableist traits, who may have ableist opinions about you. So it's really a tool for survival. It feels a little like speaking a different language, like changing your coding. It's a change of code from like your natural disabled way of communicating and doing things, and then how you engage and interact with other people, period.
You and I both, and so many people within this spectrum of chronic illness and disability, and have experienced this shitty ignorance. And it nauseates me because it's 2021 and we're being judged for having service animals or emotional support dogs, or, you know, getting out of your wheelchair, or like, I could just, the list goes on and on.
Yeah, it's like,
and I'm like, what's happening?
It's so heavy because there is so much as disabled people and chronically ill people that we do struggle through, we power through, and then on top of that, we also have to deal with like the impact of people and their ignorance and their ableism and the shame that they like project onto us. And, like dealing with healthcare workers who are for one reason or another biased against your gender, biased against the sound of your voice, the last name Lorenzo. And so many people experience that, and it's made them distrust the medical system. I have my own like dark trauma stories about like what I went through with the healthcare system and the doctors that I experienced, like who by the time nobody was helping me figure out what was happening to my body. 'Cause up until I was 23, I was able to walk pretty okay. I ended up in pain earlier than other people. And I was just like, huh. And so that's when I started seeking, medical professionals. And every time I went to any professional, they were just like, you look fine. And like sent me home.
What the hell?
Until I had to do the research on my own, found the diagnosis Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And I'm like, I think this is what it is. And then I had doctors laugh at me and they went, you don't have that. Anyway, and like changed the subject to something else. I was like scared. I didn't know what was happening to my body and why I was losing the ability to walk. I was like, am I gonna freaking die? Like, what is this? And then nobody's listening to me.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 18 years from tonight, Grant Gill will become a comedy legend when he totally kills it at his improv class's graduation performance. Knees will be slapped. Hilarity will ensue. That's why he's already keeping himself in shape and razor sharp today with wellness tips and tools from AARP to help make sure his health lives as long as he does. Because the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/healthyliving.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Eventually, just by luck, I was at one of the doctors that, again, was being very dismissive of anything I had to say. And he was showing me a scan of my hips and he was very like shocked to see that essentially I was walking around on like dislocated hips. And I'm like, well, that's kind of a symptom of what I've been trying to tell you I think I have. So I would like to be tested for it. He goes, no, I don't think you have that. Anyway, what I would like to do is...
Pero que creen esta gente? What?
I don't know.
But what was his alternative?
I don't know. There's
so much hubris. There is just so much ego.
I'm not saying I hate all healthcare professionals. I'm
exactly
saying that there is a systematic problem in the healthcare system.
Yes.
Where so many people are having the same experiences as me, trying to get diagnosis and trying to get treatment. That doctor said, no, I don't think you have this. So here's what I want to do. I want to set you up for an operation to fuse your joints together. And I had a meltdown in the office. I started like screaming, sobbing, like just so triggered that someone was going to would rather like put me under the knife, would rather risk more damage to my body than listen to me. So I had a full meltdown, just like sobbing. I was slamming my palms on his desk and like it was a show. He hated that. Like he was annoyed by that, of course. Didn't see that as a real thing. And then a woman doctor came in to hand him something. Don't know if that was an excuse or not. And she looks over at me and she goes, why is she crying? And he again is so freaking mean. He goes, ugh, eye roll. She thinks she has Ehlers-Danlos syndrome.
What a fucking piece of shit. You're a piece of shit, whoever you are. God.
He was such scum. But like the happy ending was like, she was very sweet. And she was like, oh, I've never heard of that. Do you mind spelling it for me? Let me look it up. And she looked it up, like, and she wasn't like, it didn't seem like the intent was to argue with this guy. She's just like wanted to amend an ignorance. She goes, oh, I've never heard of Ehlers-Danlos syndrome before. Do you mind spelling that for me? I would love to look it up. And she looked it up and she like looked at the like the brief definition of it. And then she looked up at my scan and she just said to him, she could have this. And from that one line, he like still was not apologetic, was still super annoyed, rolled his eyes again, threw his arms up in the air and is like, fine, I'll send her to a geneticist. And that's what I've been waiting for this entire time. I've been trying to get an appointment, a referral to see a geneticist for like at least a year at that point. And I went to the geneticist, talked to her about my symptoms, and she's like, yeah, you could very well have this. But even she, that's the trouble with having a rare condition. Even she as a geneticist was like, but I have not worked with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome before. I don't feel right clinically diagnosing you, which that's a toughie because with that condition, for the most part, you need a clinical diagnosis because there's different types of it. Most of the types, most of the types are able to find through blood tests, but the most common type doesn't have a blood test for it yet. So you just need to kind of check the boxes off. You just need to find a doctor that knows enough about it to be able to do that for you, that can just check the boxes and send you home like same day with a diagnosis. Yes. She didn't feel comfortable doing that, so she gave me the blood test. And by good luck / whatever luck, I didn't have the most common type. I had a rarer type that came out in the blood test. So like at that point, I was like, well, it's in the blood test. Nobody can tell me anything anymore that I have like one of the rarer types of EDS that came out in the blood test. So it's like a happy ending, but like these are the stories. Mm-hmm. And in like, you know, that's another like way that like kind of Latinidad and disability kind of intersect. There is kind of often, especially like in immigrant families and in low income families, this like kind of pushback against any kind of illness or disability. Like if you're not dying, you're not going to the hospital. I remember it was like really normalized in my house. One of the first things that was kind of like an indicator of like my EDS blood vessel problem stuff is that like I was 9 years old and I got out of the bath and I started losing my vision. And what was happening was I was starting to faint. I yelled for my mom. I was 9 and I was losing my vision. I was like, Mom, I can't see. And she came in and she like immediately knew what to do. Just like, here, sit down on the toilet, put your head between your knees. I'm going to get an ice bag. We're going to put an ice bag over your head. And here, drink this ice water. Let's go. And then like, and we prevented a fainting spell. Which is what I've gotten accustomed to. And I pretty much do it like that's my entire life now. It's like preventing fainting spells. So I never like fully faint because I always like figure out either like prevent it using safety measures or prevent it like by regulating my body temperature again. I got out of that and I was like, what was that? My mom said to me, oh, that's okay, honey. That's normal. It happens all the time. Because it was happening to her, because it happened in the family, right? But like nobody went to the doctor to see about this.
Dios mío. I have lost count how many times, just like you, I've had anxiety attacks in doctor's offices or like at the ER because of the same egotistical, eye-rolling attitude of some of these people in the field. And if you're listening and if you are studying to be a nurse or a doctor, I, as a patient, I beg of you that in today's day, especially where patients also have a lot of information at their fingertips, you need to listen to your patients. I get it. We didn't go through medical school and we didn't dissect corpses. I get it. But at the same time, I've learned through so many doctors that I've seen and talking to the really, really good ones is that not all doctors are up to date because things are constantly changing. Mm-hmm. They're not up to date on the medical literature. They are not up to date on, like, a lot of them don't even go to conferences. So, you know, yeah, that are necessary. Like, there's a lot there that other doctors have explained to me. They're like, unfortunately, this is why not everyone is equipped.
Yeah.
It's why not everyone listens. like you, I was dealing with a lot of not fainting spells, but I was getting really dizzy, and I was like, do I have vertigo? I went through every test in the book, from like an MRI to EKGs to a hearing test, and I had this one guy doctor be like, it's anxiety.
Oh, it's always anxiety.
They love to pin it, especially with women.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we always have to like find the new hysteria for like women aligned, women presenting like people.
Yep.
And anxiety, conversion disorder, those are all like the things that like so many professionals like to just kind of use as a way to dismiss anything else. Oh, and don't even get me started on like weight and how like anything that's happening in your body, if you're like overweight, underweight, then your weight is the problem. Fix your weight and then I'll look at anything else is the most dangerous thing I've ever heard. And I can't believe that it's so, so common. And this kind of like fat phobia and like weight, like bias that happens in healthcare spaces, I can't believe that they haven't caught on to how dangerous it is to do that to people. To be like, oh, just go home, fix your weight to the number I would like it to be, and then I'm going to look and see if there's anything else that I should be looking at.
That's laziness. That's just lazy practice, truthfully. It's I just, not only is it fat phobic, but it's also just they don't want to try to get down to the bottom of what you have, so they blame it on something they see externally, like, oh, it's your weight.
Yeah, it's very surface level. I was saying that too about like what doctors don't know. I have yet to like meet any kind of professional that I need to know about EDS. Actually know about EDS. I still all the time do not meet professionals that know what my condition is. Constantly meeting professionals that are like, can I have my med student come talk to you? And I'm just like, and that puts so much pressure on me. I'm like, okay, I have 5 minutes with this like med student, which like sometimes goes really well, and they're super receptive, and they basically listen to my TED talk about my condition. And sometimes I've had one med student who's like, so you have EDS? Yes, I do. So you like dislocate easily? I'm like, yes, I do. And then he, without asking me, just like lifts up my arm towards him and tries to dislocate my thumb.
What the fuck?
And I immediately like pull my hand back. I was like, no, don't do that. And then even though I did that, he grabs my arm from back here, pulls it again towards him, and again tries to bend my thumb backwards.
What?
And I said, no, don't do that.
I want to punch that motherfucker in the face.
And he's like, but I need to see how far. No, you don't. You don't need to see how far back it bent. What? No, get out of here. I think that I actually literally told him to get out of the room because I was like,
what a dick. I really hope he's not a doctor.
I snitched on him right away, and I was like, no. This person just tried to dislocate my thumb, like, so he could see what? That I really had EDS? What?
Ugh. What a jerk.
That's scary information always to, like, tell the public, because I watch too much true crime, and I'm like, oh, somebody's gonna use how easily my joints dislocate one day. Oh, no. Oh, my God.
No, Annie, no.
Protect.
But
I think
that's what's so important is, like, for the longest time, I didn't want to open up about my Crohn's disease. And I remember, I've gone to doctors over at Cedars-Sinai, which a lot of celebrities go to Cedars-Sinai. And I remember my gastro there was like, oh, yeah. You would be surprised as to how many celebrities I see with Crohn's and colitis, mm-hmm. but they don't open up about it.
Oh, it's such a huge stigma for sure.
It's a huge stigma. And I think it's, again, it's because of the whole, like, I'm not going to get work if people find out. And I'm like, you know what? It shouldn't matter because at the end of the day, we're still doing the damn thing. We're talented. We're working our asses off. We get shit done. I would rather be open about my mental illness and my neurodivergence with ADHD and be open about my Crohn's because I'm not just doing this. I'm not in this career solely for like, yay, look at me, I'm famous. It's like, mm-hmm. yes, I love making people laugh and I want to be creative. But at the same time, if I have a platform, then I want to use it for good. I've had people write me and I'm sure you've had tons of people write you, like parents and people with chronic illness and maybe specifically EDS, and for me, people with Crohn's and ADHD have reached out and said, because of you, I got a diagnosis, or because of you, I'm going to go get checked out. You know,
yeah.
I always tell people, always get a second opinion, a third opinion, research your doctors, freaking do whatever you can to make sure that you are heard.
Absolutely.
Because a lot of people, I think, just take a doctor's word off the bat and they just go home and then become more and more ill.
Yep.
You need to fight for yourself. You need to advocate for yourself. And I know it's not easy. And I know not everyone might have the personality to do so. So I always think it's good to have that support system, whether it's like a family member or a significant other or a friend, to come with you and help you.
Yeah, that would have been so great. I know that, like, my experience is like super isolated, so like I didn't have any support to do that. But like that also brings up just what happens sometimes, especially in like immigrant Latinx families.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 18 years from tonight, Grant Gill will become a comedy legend when he totally kills it at his improv class's graduation performance. Knees will be slapped. Hilarity will ensue. That's why he's already keeping himself in shape and razor sharp today with wellness tips and tools from AARP to help make sure his health lives as long as he does. Because the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/healthyliving.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Something I've observed in a lot of Latino families is they don't want the diagnosis. They don't want a label to be put on themselves, on their children, that would hinder them, because there's this big pressure, especially as like immigrant families, especially as low income families, to, you know, find that like financial success. And so a lot of people feel like if there is some kind of label, if there is some kind of diagnosis, then that is that much harder. I mean, and that happens like with any kind of like marginalized identity, period. In my family, mm-hmm, it was like, mm-hmm, you're already Latina and a daughter of immigrants. You can't be gay. you can't be disabled also. Like, we need you to, like, you know, do the things and be successful. So like that's in the past. And like in my immediate family, they're okay with my queerness. Okay is the perfect word.
They're okay with it. Yes.
Enthusiastic, no. But okay. An extended family, we don't talk about it. Extended Latino family, they're just happy to pretend, oh, she's just quirky. She's just a 30-year-old that never had a boyfriend and is just quirky. So we don't talk about it. But like, yeah, like disability was a thing that like, it's a double thing. It's like there's a subconscious thing about like, oh no, what are you gonna do? Like, you need to be financially successful. And if you have a disability, we have no examples of disabled financial success. So that just seems like an impossibility to us. It's never gonna happen. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's partly that, and partly I think just like, you know, your basic, you know, families never want their relatives, their loved ones to be sick. So it's just, they just kind of dance together in that way. They just like this feeling of like, no, you don't have anything, you're perfect. You know, that basic denial of like, no, you're not sick. And then the secondary, like, social political thing of like, no, you're not politically, financially marginalized. So all these things are going through people's minds in regards to like attaining any kind of diagnosis through the healthcare system. So that's why a lot of people, like, they don't want that second opinion, third opinion, because they want... They like that dismissal.
They
want
to be able to hear.
The doctor said nothing is wrong with me, so nothing is wrong with me. They'll take it home. They'll keep it. And the people who are actually, you know, sick will, like, suffer and struggle until they hit a breaking point. And at that point, like, I just cross my fingers that you find the right doctor that, like, will give you the right diagnosis and the help that you need.
Well, I always wondered, I'm like, why is it that my people always just accept what the doctor says and calls it a day? And I'm like, no, that's, you clearly are not okay. Like, this doctor doesn't know what they're talking about, and you're just going home going, bueno, el doctor dijo que estoy bien. Tú sabes que tengo que ponerme en dieta para mi colesterol. Y...
Ooh, that one hurts. Because we're talking about, like, we're very aware right now as, like, millennials, like, going through the process. And so you and I, if, like, we run into a doctor that's like, your weight is a problem, I'm not going to bother looking at anything else. We're like, that is wrong. You cannot do that to people. You cannot just dismiss what is happening in my body because of the weight that I'm at. But people who are older have that mindset exactly. They're like, they will go home with the same exact experience that you and I went through, and they're like, oh, the doctor just said I need to lose weight and now feel better, like,
and take like some random medication that's gonna only fuck my liver.
Yeah, you need so much more than that. You need people to actually look at your health and not just like look at you, have a biased opinion of you, and send you home with just that. Like, that is not acceptable.
I mean, I know we're going on tangents here, but I wanted to touch upon this also, speaking of weight, right? It's not just an issue amongst our doctors. It's, again, within our community. I grew up understanding both sides. Both my mom being obese, she was over 300 pounds at one point throughout my childhood, right? And her doctors would say, you're morbidly obese. And people, that's all they would see. And I, as a kid, I would deal with people talking shit about my mom. But what's funny is that even my mom, at her heaviest, was healthier than my father, who was the skinny one. Then me, being una flacucha, but it's genuinely in my genetics. Like, my sister and I both got my dad's, like, metabolism. But every time I go back to freaking Miami, I'm telling you, every freaking time someone stops me and tells me I'm too skinny and I need to eat. And I say all this to say that our culture, también, bro, y'all need to shut up. I mean...
I mean, really, truly, like you said, stop. It all. You said it all when you said, like, some people are told to lose weight, some people are told to gain it. And I'm like, truly, everybody should just shut up. Because... if it were you on the other side of that, let's say you have a disability, let's for the sake of argument, it is your weight that is part of this disability. The weight is the health issue. Imagine if every single person you met every single day said to you the same thing. If you did this, you would no longer be unhealthy. If you did this, you would no longer be disabled. And you just had to go on essentially a freaking book tour every day explaining to people your health, explaining to people your body, or just listening to that on repeat, every single person giving you the same advice about what you should do for your optimal health. No, that's not a good time. That's not pleasant. That's not appropriate. So don't do that to people. Don't give people unsolicited advice. If you ever feel genuine concern about someone's health, maybe even give them a warning, like, hey, like, there's something that I think might help. Like, are you in a place to, like, talk about that right now? And they can tell you, no, it's probably going to be a no. And if they are open to, like, listening to advice about their health, then maybe it's a yes, and maybe you guys can talk about it. But it is so inappropriate to just, like, especially to strangers, be like, here's what I think is going to, like, help you in regards to your health, in regards to your appearance, in regards to your body. It's not appropriate. It needs to end yesterday. No way.
Mic drop. So Annie, a lot of folks like us in the disability and chronic illness community often will say something like, oh, I only have enough spoons to do this today, or I don't have enough spoons for that. And oftentimes people on the outside don't know what we're talking about when we're mentioning spoons. So do you care to elaborate?
Yeah, we use the word spoony. It's the way that some people identify. Not everybody identifies with it, and like, they have their reasons. So spoons were used by a chronic illness blogger as a metaphor for like the amount of energy one might have as a disabled, chronically ill person, mentally ill person, anyone under the disability umbrella. So like their example was like, at the dinner table with a variety of spoons, said if I want to take a shower, that would maybe take me 2 spoons, whatever, just like a nice little like calculation of the mm-hmm. amount of energy specific to anyone with a disability has during the day. And so it functions kind of like, you could make that metaphor so many things, gas tanks, you know, battery charging, etc. But it's the term is specific to like disability culture and how much
yeah.
limited energy you have as a disabled person.
I like saying it. I'm like, mira, I only have so many cucharas to deal with your bullshit today. I'm up to here.
Love it.
With my cucharas.
Love it.
But oh my gosh, Annie, this has been incredible. I have been wanting to interview you for so long and have you as a guest on our podcast because it is such an important dialogue, especially for our community. because I have dealt with so much ignorance from both doctors and people within my own hometown of good old Miami, Florida, and even in the comments section of my videos, and hearing all your stories and the stories of so many of my other disabled friends, and I'm like, what do we have to do to really just like shout it from the rooftops that people are just not educated enough on this? So before we close, what would you like to tell our audience? I know there's so much, but if there's one thing that you could tell them to think about, or if they want to learn more about disability and chronic illness and invisible illness, what would it be?
I would say definitely that if you want to, then the work does fall on you to look for it, because so much of it is already out there. There's so many books, there's so many creators. I wouldn't recommend like hopping into the DMs of any kind of disabled creator and you know, asking them to explain everything 101, because I'm sure they have like YouTube videos or any other kind of social media video writing, blogging content for where they talk about that stuff. And like, very importantly, learning about like the spectrums of disability, that it's not binary. Like blindness and deafness are not just like an on and off switch. It's not just people can hear or cannot hear, but there's spectrums of how much you can hear and spectrums of how much you can see, and me with EDS, and spectrums of how long I'm able to be on my feet, how long I'm able to dance, how long I'm able to be in an upright position or in a hot temperature before I pass out. Like there's just such big spectrums, and it's so individual person to person. And I guess like the only other thing I could say is just to like really put that on your table, put that on your desk, to learn about disability and learn about accessibility and how to be more inclusive and welcoming to disabled people in your life.
Love it. And where can people find you?
I am at Annie Elaney on everything except Facebook, where I use my name, Annie Segarra. And Annie Elaney is with a double E in the middle because it's Annie Elaney. So when you try to write it, there's going to be 2 E's in there, and that's how you can find me.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Annie. You are the best.
Thank you so much.
And hopefully some people walk away with some good stuff today.
Yay. Thank you so much for having me.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match 2 of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.